Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Let's start with a coronavirus update. As of yesterday, August 21, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, reported that there were 5,551,793 confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S., with 173,490 deaths. Worldwide, these numbers are much higher, but sticking with the U.S. figures, have you noticed that the deaths tally has shot up over the past several weeks? That's because the U.S., which is conducting far more testing for COVID-19, as the virus is also known, than anywhere else on Earth, more than 75 million people have been tested. Also, we have the disputes about the accuracy of COVID-19 death figures. I mentioned that the head of the CDC recently admitted there is likely an incentive for hospitals to attribute deaths to coronavirus, since they get 20% more in Medicare reimbursement for deaths attributed to the virus, as I understand it. Also, White House Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx has stated that the CDC has told doctors to attribute the cause of a patient's death to coronavirus if they were determined to have had coronavirus at the time of death, regardless of other factors involved, such as heart disease, kidney failure, cancer, etc. And Birx was reported by the Washington Post to have been critical privately of CDC methodology in reporting COVID-19 deaths and cases, stating that she believed the deaths were being overreported by as much as 25%. Whatever the truth is, these figures are being used by the political left to justify ongoing lockdowns, sheltering in place, and business closures to damage the economy and people's lives in order to blame Donald Trump and get Democrats elected this November. So while in many parts of the country people are rebelling against the continuing restrictions on their lives and damage to their businesses and livelihoods, governors and mayors continue to order people to stay home most of the time and keep schools, businesses, and places of worship and recreation closed. Communist China and Russia have recently both announced that they have viable COVID-19 vaccines, and the U.S. is fast-tracking the development and trials of its own vaccines. President Trump has alleged that deep state apparatchiks and or nomenclatura, that is, lower and upper level Democrat bureaucrats, appear to be trying to delay development of these vaccines until after the November elections, which seems plausible to me. A British medical official the other day declared that the COVID-19 virus, quote, will be with us forever, unquote, and, quote, a bit like the flu, close quote, will likely require continuously updated vaccines for its various mutations. How all this will affect the November elections remains to be seen. Now, I want to discuss the other big news of the past week so far. Former Vice President Joe Biden's nomination for president at the Democratic National Convention, the virtual convention, that is, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. As you know, there's a lot at stake in the upcoming elections and how they will affect the future of this country. And the mainstream media is little more than the ideological and propaganda wing of the Democratic Party, which is, by proxy, the Communist Party USA, along with other leftist parties and organizations of this country, and the globalist oligarchy in bed with Communist China. Although downplaying and hidden constantly, the MSN takes its orders, that is the mainstream media, the MSN takes its media, its orders from the very powerful left, from very powerful leftists, including billionaires who are making billions doing business with Red China and promoting world government, and some very radical communist organizations who, implausible as it may seem, are funded by and aligned with globalists promoting the end of capitalism, Western democracy, and individual freedoms. Joe Biden may have secured the Democratic Party's nomination because he appeared to be the least extremist of the many Democrat candidates, but he is by no means moderate, despite what one media outlet called his rush to the political center. His choice of U.S. Senator Kamala Harris of California as the vice presidential running mate, no doubt a choice made by his handlers, is further evidence of the hard left politics Biden has embraced. Harris is one of the most left-wing U.S. senators and has a history of hardcore leftist positions and of close association with the far left, as we will see. Her positions include open borders and amnesty for illegal aliens. And why not? They're part of the left's political base. The so-called Green New Deal that would kill millions of U.S. jobs and destroy the economy and other radical leftist ideas. Together, they will be willing puppets of the communists and globalists seeking to get rid of President Trump and transform the nation by overthrowing our constitutional form of government. Here's some audio from the Alex Jones Show, August 8, at Infowars.com, where Jones gives his take on the left's efforts to remove Trump. You will hear Trump relate that there are a lot of powerful people with a lot of money who are very angry with him and want him gone. I think he's referring to the globalist elites, many of them making lots of money doing business with Red China and pushing world government. Jones, the well-known conspiracy theorist, refers to these elites as being involved in pedophile networks, such as the Jeffrey Epstein pedophile network, and also what Jones calls proponents of a post-humanist era, like those world government promoters pushing what they call the Fourth Industrial Revolution, whereby humans would be subjugated to artificial intelligence, robots and computers. You can actually do a YouTube search and see videos of the World Economic Forum on the about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Of course, they're careful to present it as a wonderful utopian sort of a public relations fluff. I find it scary stuff, but fascinating nonetheless. Please play soundbite one.
InfoWars, the most banned network in the world.
A so-called anti-fascist website is encouraging, quote, all manner of physical violence against Trump supporters and capitalists.
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's an actor dressed to look just like President Donald Trump as he's assassinated on stage.
I'd like to punch him in the face.
I'll join a million other people surrounding the United States Capitol.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
This is a national emergency.
Joe Biden says he is concerned President Trump will try to steal the November election.
This president's going to try to steal this election.
This is a trial run for the President of the United States, who may be organizing to not accept what happens when we have the election.
If he loses, and I expect that he will, then we have to be prepared for what he is going to do in the immediate aftermath of such a loss.
Whether he knows it yet or not, he will be leaving.
Here you have four chiefs of staff coming out and ripping the skin off of Trump. And you have so many rank and file military personnel saying, whoa, we're not a military state. This is not who we are.
If he's not elected, is he going to pull out his military? Is he going to engage us? He is already alluded to. There may be a civil war.
He is clearly trying to ignite a civil war in this country.
No borders, no walls, no USA at all.
These are not acts of peaceful protest. These are acts of domestic terror.
Seriously, Mr. President?
First of all, I think it's the obligation of some executive branch officials to refuse to carry out some of these orders.
Just because he might not want to move out of the White House doesn't mean we won't have an inauguration.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you.
I promise you, I'm absolutely convinced they will escort him from the White House with great dispatch.
Government's going to kill this guy.
So I have a lot of enemies out there. This may be the last time you'll see me for a while.
A lot of very, very rich enemies, but they are not happy with what I'm doing. But I figure we have one chance to do it, and no other president's going to do what I do.
Now, you just saw the president from Thursday. Got almost no attention. We covered it Friday. President Trump makes cryptic remark at Ohio speech. I have a lot of enemies. This may be the last time you see me for a while. They are moving against our republic. They are attempting to completely collapse this nation. And it's all under treaty with the UN that traitors in our government signed on to. Trump has removed us from those treaties. We'll go over how real Trump is. And though I get frustrated and wish sometimes he'd do more, he is hamstrung. He is sabotaged by the double and triple agents who work for different power structures around him that continue to not execute the will of the people and the oaths of office that they've sworn. But most of the power has been removed from the government and is now in corporations and multinational systems. And that's why the president has trouble getting control of the government, because most of it's been transferred out of the American people's hands. That's why he said we have one more shot to try to regain control of the government. Doesn't mean our government's perfect, but man, the globalist Chi-Com devil worshiper pedophile New World Order government, Satan's government, if they're successful overthrowing the U.S. government, you're going to look back. I'm going to look back on this and sure wish we'd done more. Getting back to the Democrat convention, I don't know if you watched much of it over the 4 days it was held last week. I didn't watch a lot of it, but what I did see was predictable. Everywhere, racism, racism, systemic racism, racial justice, and on and on and on. I didn't want the radical left was well represented, along with the traits I attribute to these people. That is, again, self-righteous hate, fraud, and hypocrisy. There was plenty of rage at President Trump with a barrage of baseless charges that he's a terrible president and is ruining the country. Lots of lies about Trump and the state of the nation and the outrageous hypocrisy of all these fabulously rich and corrupt politicians declaring that they are the only ones who can save us from ourselves, from a fate seemingly worse than death. 4 more years of a Trump presidency. I won't go into most of the speakers at the convention. You can watch their speeches on YouTube and elsewhere if you want. But let's talk about some of what was said by the most notables. To start off, here are some highlights from Biden's acceptance speech. I'll play a few minutes from the beginning and at the end of his 22-minute talk, which he no doubt practiced giving diligently and carried off rather well with only one gaffe where – I think you'll hear it here. He said at the end where – where he said there was nothing that was accomplished by Americans when they come together. I think he meant nothing that they failed to accomplish. The speech, typical of Biden and the Democratic platform, was full of platitudes, bromides, pablum, meant to mollify the masses after attempting to scare them into embracing Biden to the Democrats. It was long on rhetoric and pretty much devoid of substance. That's because they don't want to scare you to death with what they really want to do. Please play soundbite 2.
Good evening. Ella Baker, a giant of the civil rights movement, left us with this wisdom. Give people light, and they will find the way. Give people light. Those are words for our time. The current president has cloaked American darkness for much too long. Too much anger, too much fear, too much division. Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. We'll choose hope over fear, facts over fiction, fairness over privilege. I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility I accept this nomination for president of the United States of America. Maybe George Floyd's murder was a breaking point. Maybe John Lewis is passing the inspiration. But however it's come to be, however it's happened, America's ready, in John's words, to lay down, quote, the heavy burden of hate at last, and to end the hard work of rooting out our systemic racism. You know, American history tells us that it's been in our darkest moments that we've made our greatest progress, that we've found the light. In this dark moment, I believe we're poised to make great progress again, that we can find the light once more. You know, many people have heard me say this, but I've always believed you can define America in one word: possibilities. The defining feature of America, everything is possible. That in America, everyone, and I mean everyone, should be given an opportunity to go as far as their dreams and God-given ability will take them. We can never lose that. In times as challenging as these, I believe there's only one way forward. As a united America, united in our pursuit of a more perfect union, united in our dreams of a better future for us and for our children, united in our determination to make the coming years bright. Are you ready? I believe we are. This is a great nation. We're a good and decent people. For Lord's sake, this is the United States of America. And there's never been anything we've been able to accomplish when we've done it together. The Irish poet Seamus Heaney once wrote, "History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up and hope and history rhyme." This is our moment to make hope and history rhyme. With passion and purpose, let us begin, you and I together, one nation, under God, united in our love for America, united in our love for each other. For love is more powerful than hate. Hope is more powerful than fear. And light is more powerful than dark. This is our moment. This is our mission. May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight, as love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation. And this is a battle we will win, and we'll do it together. I promise you. Thank you, and may God bless you, and may God protect our troops.
Yeah, you catch that near toward the end there where he said there's nothing the American people have been able to accomplish when they come together. Something like that. And although he used the word God a couple times there, if you noticed, a lot of the other people took out, when they gave the Pledge of Allegiance, they took out the terms one nation, they deleted under God. He's the only one using the God analogies. Except for the, unfortunately, tens of millions of brain-dead ninnies who embrace all this crap and will vote for Biden. The rest of us have to look at that and kind of wonder. I mean, it's one of the most vacuous things I've ever heard him say. He really didn't give anything about his plans in there, and that's for good reason, as I said, because it would scare you to death. We'll hear more about that as time goes on, though. I have to agree with radio host Rush Limbaugh that although Biden was able to make his speech with reasonably good execution this time, he's still plainly mentally deteriorating and is incapable of vigorously debating Trump, and his handlers know it. Now let's hear the communist lover and outrageous hypocrite Bernie Sanders' speech at the convention. It's Sanders' radical leftist agenda, after all, which is being embraced by the party. So let's hear what he has to say.
Good evening. Our great nation is now living in an unprecedented moment. We're facing the worst public health crisis in 100 years and the worst economic collapse since the Great Depression. We are confronting systemic racism and the enormous threat to our planet of climate change. And in the midst of all of this, we have a president who is not only incapable of addressing these crises, but is leading us down the path of authoritarianism. This election is the most important in the modern history of this country. In response to the unprecedented crises we face, we need an unprecedented response, a movement like never before, of people who are prepared to stand up and fight for democracy and decency and against greed, oligarchy, and bigotry. And we need Joe Biden as our next president. Let me take this opportunity to say a word to the millions of people who supported my campaign this year and in 2016. My friends, thank you for your trust, your support, and the love you showed Jane, me, and our family. Together, we have moved this country in a bold new direction, showing that all of us, black and white, Latino, Native American, Asian American, gay and straight, native-born and immigrant, yearn for a nation based on the principles of justice, love, and compassion. Our campaign ended several months ago, but our movement continues and is getting stronger every day. Many of the ideas we fought for that just a few years ago were considered radical are now mainstream. But let us be clear. If Donald Trump is reelected, all the progress we have made will be in jeopardy. At its most basic, this election is about preserving our democracy. During this president's term, the unthinkable has become normal. He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermined the U.S. Postal Service, deployed the military and federal agents against peaceful protesters, threatened to delay the election, and suggested that he will not leave office if he loses. This is not normal, and we must never treat it like it is. Under this administration, authoritarianism has taken root in our country. I and my family, and many of yours, know the insidious way authoritarianism destroys democracy, decency, and humanity. As long as I am here, I will work with progressives, with moderates, and yes, with conservatives to preserve this nation from a threat that so many of our heroes fought and died to defeat. This president is not just a threat to our democracy, but by rejecting science, he has put our lives and health in jeopardy. Trump has attacked doctors and scientists trying to protect us from the pandemic while refusing to take strong action to produce the masks, gowns, and gloves our healthcare workers desperately need. Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Trump golfs. His actions fanned this pandemic, resulting in over 170,000 deaths and a nation still unprepared to protect its people. Furthermore, Trump's negligence has exacerbated the economic crisis we are now experiencing. Since this pandemic began, over 30 million people have lost their jobs and many have lost their health insurance. Millions of working families are wondering how they will feed their kids, and they're worried that they will be evicted from their homes. And how has Trump responded? Instead of maintaining the $600 a week unemployment supplement that workers were receiving and the $1,200 emergency checks that many of you received, instead of helping small businesses, Trump concocted fraudulent executive orders that do virtually nothing to address the crisis while threatening the very future of Social Security and Medicare. But the truth is that even before Trump's negligent response to this pandemic, too many hardworking families have been caught on an economic treadmill with no hope of ever getting ahead. Together, we must build a nation that is more equitable, more compassionate, and more inclusive. I know that Joe Biden will begin that fight on day one. Let me offer you just a few examples of how Joe will move us forward. Joe supports raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. This will give 40 million workers a pay raise and push the wage scale up for everyone else. Joe will also make it easier for workers to join unions, create 12 weeks of paid family leave, fund universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, and make childcare affordable for millions of families. Joe will rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and fight the threat of climate change by transitioning us to 100% clean electricity over the next 15 years. These initiatives will create millions of good-paying jobs all across our country. As you know, we are the only industrialized nation not to guarantee health care for all people. While Joe and I disagree on the best path to get universal coverage, he has a plan that will greatly expand health care and cut the cost of prescription drugs. Further, he will lower the eligibility age of Medicare from 65 down to 60. To help reform our broken criminal justice system, Joe will end private prisons and detention centers, cash bail, and the school-to-prison pipeline. And to heal the soul of our nation, Joe Biden will end the hate and division Trump has created. He will stop the demonization of immigrants, the coddling of white nationalists, the racist dog whistling, the religious bigotry, and the ugly attacks on women. My friends, I say to you, to everyone who supported other candidates in the primary, and to those who may have voted for Donald Trump in the last election, the future of our democracy is at stake. The future of our economy is at stake. The future of our planet is at stake. We must come together, defeat Donald Trump, and elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as our next president and vice president. My friends, the price of failure is just too great to imagine. Thank you.
Please. Yes, it's all so terrible. And it's all the fault of white nationalists and Trump and racism and on and on and on. Biden is going to eliminate the school-to-prison pipeline. Wasn't that the policy of the people in Florida who keep letting the high school shooter off down there? The police were called to his place some 40 times. He threatened to kill people, but we don't want him to go to jail, so they just let him off. He was able to buy a gun and go in there and slaughter people because of other problems with the security of the school. Well, there goes crazy Bernie again. Lie after lie after lie. Trump is leading us down the path to authoritarianism, while Bernie has spent his lifetime praising communist dictatorships. Trump has sent the military against peaceful protesters. Peaceful protesters. The pandemic is all Trump's fault. This guy has become rich promoting his communist ideology. He's now a millionaire or multimillionaire, owns 3 homes, has lots of cash. But do you think he's going to willingly give up all this money and property if the dictatorship of the proletariat he's been so long in advocating comes to pass? Remember, to communists, lies are truth. Hate is love. War is peace. Madness is sanity. And outrageous hypocrisy is typical. Oh, so typical. To me, Sanders typifies the imbecility and madness of the left. So many of these people, like the Clintons and the Obamas, are now filthy rich, yet they have spent their lifetimes promoting socialism with its ideology of redistribution of wealth, abolition of capitalism, and individual freedoms. Such outrageous hypocrisy. Do they really believe they're going to keep all that wealth under the totalitarian state they are advocating? Well, maybe if they're among those who remain in power. Sanders is right about one thing, though. His formerly fringe communistic beliefs have now become mainstream with the Democratic Party. In the mainstream media, inhabited by so many left-wing activists masquerading as journalists, in social media and other societal institutions, and the business world. Despite the DNC's attempts to play down its left-wing radicalism and promote its candidates as being of the American mainstream, there were plenty of references to the radical left during the convention, from radicals like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez nominating her good friend Bernie Sanders for president. She said she was supposed to do that. And a bald Ayanna Pressley of the famous Squad declaring that Republicans are ignoring the needs of Americans. To images of the communist Black Lives Matter movement accompanying a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song at the end of a night's presentations. Let's take a look at the communist and globalist ties of Kamala Harris. Here's audio from a short video on the newamerican.com's website posted August 18 entitled Unmasking Kamala Harris's Revolutionary Maoist Ties with moderator Christian Gomez. Christian Gomez interviews author, researcher, and filmmaker Trevor Loudon, who discusses the far-left revolutionary Marxist-Leninist and Maoist ties of those around and propping up Senator Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's presidential running mate and potential future U.S. president, while at the same time she's being portrayed in the mainstream media as a centrist politically. Play soundbite four, please.
President Trump said recently, if Joe Biden is elected, he will sell the country to China. And he couldn't have got a better partner to do that.
This is Christian Gomez with the New American Magazine. And today we have Trevor Loudon, anti-communist author, researcher, and filmmaker with us. Trevor, welcome again to the show.
Well, thanks very much, Christian. Always a pleasure to be on.
So for at least 3 years now, you've been predicting that the 2020 Democratic presidential candidate would be Kamala Harris, that she would be on the ticket. And here we are, and Kamala Harris, well, no surprise to you at least, she is she's on that ticket as Joe Biden's running mate. So what has been the driving force to get Kamala Harris to be on the ticket? And of course, with being the running mate, do you think she'll have more say than a typical vice presidential typical vice president has had in the past?
Well, actually, she is the candidate. You know, Joe Biden, the moment Joe Biden chose her, Joe Biden became redundant. He could fall under a bus tomorrow and nobody would notice. She is the candidate, and if they win, she will effectively be the president. It will be the third term of Barack Obama, and she will finish the job that Barack Obama started. The reason I predicted this 3 years ago is that I read their press. See, this all goes back to the Rainbow Coalition of the 80s, when Jesse Jackson ran twice, 84 and 88, got fourth in the Democratic primary, I believe, 7 million votes. His campaign was run by Maoist communists from the Communist Workers' Party, League of Revolutionary Struggle, and they had the idea of getting all the minorities together with the progressive whites. So the Rainbow Coalition was identity politics writ large. You had the yellow stripe for the Asians. You had the black stripe for the African Americans. You had the red stripe for the Native Americans. You had the lavender stripe for the gays. And this was their terminology. So one of the key people in the Rainbow Coalition was a young Marxist law student from Stanford University, active in the League of Revolutionary Struggle. Well, he married into the Sandler family from San Francisco the Golden West savings and loan fortune. And he used their money to get himself a lot of cachet, a lot of influence inside the top reaches of the Democratic Party and also the Democracy Alliance, which is a gathering of about 150 left-wing billionaires, George Soros, Norman Lear, Tom Steyer, and Steve Phillips basically tells them where to put their money. And Steve Phillips was the man who got $10 million together in 2008, did big voting registration drives in 16 southern states, and that's what got his very good buddy Barack Obama ahead of Hillary Clinton. Well, Steve Phillips is the man behind Kamala Harris.
So Steve Phillips is sort of the connection between Kamala Harris and the Communist Workers' Party, the now defunct Communist Workers' Party. Can you tell us a little bit about the Communist Workers' Party and how significant that is, that connection to Kamala Harris and even Barack Obama?
Was actually the League of Revolutionary Struggle that he was involved in. And the League, the Communist Workers' Party was another group within that, that coalition, on the Rainbow Coalition. But the League of Revolutionary Struggle split in 1991.
And this was a Marxist-Leninist organization, the League of Revolution?
Marxist-Leninist pro-China. Maoist pro-China, Marxist-Leninist communist organization. And they split into two factions in 1991. One group moved in and eventually became merged into the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, the people behind Black Lives Matter. And the other one moved into the Democratic Party. And Kamala is affiliated with both factions. But it was Steve Phillips moved into the Democratic Party. Most of his people did. They set up a group called Power Pack, which got Barack Obama ahead of Hillary Clinton. It was behind Andrew Gillum, the Marxist who almost won the governorship of Florida last year. He was behind Stacey Abrams, who almost won the governorship of Georgia in 2018, I mean. So what it does, it picks Marxist candidates of color, this is their terminology, and does massive voter registration drives amongst Black and Latino communities. Now, Steve Phillips wrote a book, Brown is the New White, endorsed by Obama, endorsed by Pelosi. And the argument is Democrats, forget about the middle. Forget about the middle. Don't spend all your money trying to entice 1 or 2% of people in the middle to go to the Democrats. There are millions of Democrats in the southern states, Black, Latino, Asian American, who are Democrat, but they don't vote. So get among them, sign them up to vote, get them to the polls, and run Black or Latino candidates to entice them to the polls. So Kamala Harris was chosen to fulfill this role. She was chosen way back.
Now, Trevor, what you're talking about also reminds me of sort of a micro version of the Tricontinental Conference that you had in Cuba in the 60s, where you had the Asian communists, the Latin American communists led by Castro, and the African communists sort of converging together to sort of create an anti-America, anti-imperialist front of those ethnic nations or continents. And what you're describing with the Asian vote, the Latino vote, and the Black vote in the South seems like they're trying to recreate that, but domestically, internally, for the communist cause. Would you say that that's a fair assessment or accurate comparison?
I think that's completely accurate, Christian. See, Maoism is all about racial politics. You know, when the old Soviet way was you get the class struggle, you get the working class to overthrow the capitalist. But in China and Asia, you didn't have an industrial working class. So you had to use the racial minorities, the ethnic groups, and pit them against each other. So Maoism is all about racial minorities, racial agitation, etc. So this happens in the streets. This is The Black Lives Matter demonstrations we've seen lately are run by two pro-Chinese communist groups, the Freedom Road Socialist Organization and Liberation Road. But electorally, they work with the minorities, particularly in the South, to overturn the Republican Party in the South. That's why Virginia is now a blue state. This was orchestrated by pro-Chinese communists through their group New Virginia Majority, which signed up 200,000 minority voters. They're doing it in North Carolina, they're doing it in Tennessee, they're doing it in Georgia, they're doing it in Florida. This is all Maoist.
Now, Trevor, we've recently heard from the intelligence community that they're saying that there's Chinese interference in this election and that communist China wants to get President Trump and Pence out of the White House and replace with Joe Biden. So what is the connection between Kamala Harris and communist China? If she's in the VP there, in the VP office in the White House, and Biden becomes the president, what should we expect to happen with U.S.-Chinese relations and foreign policy?
Well, you know, she has been making these, she's been playing the anti-China game a little bit to make herself look tough. But look, her parents were Maoists. They were in a group that became the Black Panther Party. She was a mistress of Willie Brown, Communist China's best friend in the Bay Area and a longtime Communist Party supporter. She was the protege of Steve Phillips, the Maoist communist. You know, President Trump said recently, if Joe Biden is elected, he will sell the country to China. And he couldn't have got a better partner to do that. She was a big fan of Rose Pak, for instance, who was the Communist China's biggest operative in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's very heavily involved with the Liberation Road, Freedom Road socialist organization circles, who are completely pro-China. She mentored a young woman called Latifa Simon, who was very actively involved with a group called Standing Together to Organize a Revolutionary Movement, a pro-Chinese Maoist group. Van Jones was one of the main members of that. So she is connected very heavily with the San Francisco pro-Chinese left, has been her entire life. Her parents were connected to it as well. That's why she's a big Black Lives Matter fan, because Black Lives Matter is modeled on the Black Panthers, which was Maoist, communist, pro-Chinese.
And of course,
all through, her whole pedigree is pro-China.
And of course, you have Patrice Cullors, one of the co-founders of BLM, saying that they are Marxist-trained or trained Marxists. And of course, you have the other radical left communist parties, like the Workers' World Party, a Marxist-Leninist party on their website they proclaim themselves to be. And they say right on their website that they're also involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. Trevor, thank you so much for joining us today and for exposing Kamala Harris and the ties that link her to Maoist, the Communist Workers' Party, Steve Phillips, these various racial ethnic coalitions that use race as a veneer to promote Marxist-Leninist Maoist doctrine. Thank you so much, Trevor. We hope to have you again to continue discussing Kamala Harris as the election, as we get closer to the election day. Thank you so much, Trevor.
So, as you just heard and has been widely reported, Kamala Harris was the mistress of Willie Brown, who's still a powerful figure in the California Democratic Party machine. Brown, for those of you unaware of it, was a longtime speaker of the California State Assembly and a former mayor of San Francisco, and a longtime friend of pro-communist Chinese Maoist organizations in California. Brown is credited with giving Harris her start in politics that led her to becoming state attorney general in California and now a U.S. senator from California. And although Harris tries to portray herself as having had to struggle as a person of color growing up, she had a pampered, privileged upbringing and is the descendant of a rich slave-owning family from Jamaica. Nevertheless, Harris, like her parents, is affiliated with Maoist communist groups and individuals and can be expected to take direction from them if she wins the vice presidency or presidency should Biden fail to be up to the task. And this is another thing that you see, which is very disturbing, is all these very, very wealthy people, many of them having grown up around wealth, and turning toward communism. Maybe as a way of easing their guilty feelings about being so wealthy and privileged. But like I've said many times, these people are outrageous hypocrites. They fully expect to keep their money. They could give up their money. Think of all the money that could be pooled, billions, maybe even trillions of dollars if you include these corporations and stuff that advocate this garbage. They could appoint a Soviet, a committee, Soviet being the Russian term for committee, to oversee it all and disperse it. And these people should really not have much money since they're advocating we shouldn't have it. But of course, no, they try to cover it up, say, oh, no, no, it's we'll all be wonderful. We'll all be so happy. Well, I've never felt that America was the be-all and end-all of all countries and governments, and I never put on a pedestal our founding fathers, as one idiot leftist commentator claims. Trump supporters do. Of course, we have not been a perfect country and form of government, but we have it way better here in the U.S. in terms of economic prosperity and individual freedoms than most of the other countries around the world. And I recognize that enlightened capitalism works in terms of providing a better standard of living for more people than any of the socialist countries around the world, at least the really devoted socialist countries. There are limitations to it, but yes, capitalism can provide a good life for many, many people if they are willing to work for a living and accumulate wealth, and there is economic opportunity. The totalitarian socialists have never succeeded at doing the same anywhere, although we do see some of these societies emulating American capitalism economics in varying degrees today. Sure, we can and must do more to ensure a better future for all the people here in the USA. That begins by limiting immigration so there is more opportunity for those here rather than flooding the country with millions upon millions of desperately poor people to kill jobs, wages, and other benefits. The less promotion of mass legal and illegal immigration has nothing at all to do with humanitarian or concerns or compassion. It's always been a ploy to take over and destroy the country and create the hallucination of a utopia on earth that never existed anywhere. Likewise, destroying capitalism and individual rights and freedoms is not going to create that utopia either. As you've all been hearing over and over, there's so much at stake in the November elections. We have a chance to vote for what we believe in, perhaps for the last time if we fail. Let's not let that happen. That's it for another show. Hope you found it of value. See you again 2 weeks from now, and good night.